Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 4th of November. This hour of the program, we invited two of our better analysts to join us to discuss what happened during the midterm elections and to ask the question, what the election tells the president about how he should govern, what the election tells Republicans and Democrats, if anything, about how they should get together and move forward on what the public has said is the biggest concern they have, and that is jobs, I believe, and the economy. We should have Jonathan Alter with us, we hope, in just a moment. He is senior editor at Newsweek and author of The Promise, President Obama Year One. He's also written a wonderful book about FDR, The Defining Moment, FDR's 100 Days and the Triumph of Hope. He's national affairs columnist for Newsweek and an analyst for NBC News and MSNBC. Joining us the second hour of the program, David Winston will be here, president of the Winston Group and former director of planning for Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. So we'll be welcoming your phone calls. We're having a hard time getting Jonathan right now. So in the meantime, we will just open phone lines to find out what you think about the results of the election just a couple days ago. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. We'll use as a starting off point the president's address yesterday afternoon, in which he talked about the largest pickup in the House of Representatives on the part of the Republicans since World War II. He said a lot of things in that address yesterday. He said that he was still digging his way, still digging our way out of a pretty big new mess. The economy was in a free fall, he said, when he took office. Americans have seen 9 months of private sector growth, but they have not seen anything nearly as high as what they would like to see. He discussed that he would get together with House leadership, Boehner and McConnell and Pelosi and Reid, and talk about where they might be able to find some kind of compromise. But this was a huge victory, of course, for the Republicans, and we're trying to get deep analysis this hour of why it is that this happened. What were Americans saying? And the big question, I think, for this hour and for the next couple of years, if not beyond, is what will add to our growth? What will get people back to work in this country? What will lower that very high unemployment rate? How will we deal with record deficits? What about, it's been a theme of the last couple of years as well, what about spending? Did we bail out banks and didn't think enough about taking care of people who are hurting and give a large enough stimulus to jobs? Is it tax breaks that small businesses need more? What are our, as he asked the question, priorities? What do we care about? And how do we move forward in an era where I think we're going to see even greater divisions? I think it will be very difficult for us to move ahead here. But certainly the American people are saying, you got to deal with the economy. It's got to happen. So we'll welcome phone calls until we reach Jonathan Alter. I'm not sure where he is. His brother-in-law, actually, is Steve Kagan. He told us the last time that he was with us to look at that particular race in Wisconsin, and it would say a great deal about where the rest of the country was going. And I think he was right with that. So here's our number, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, and we will just speak with you until we can get Jonathan Alter. David Winston will be joining us, Republican, fine Republican analyst, a little bit later during this show. We'll start our calls with Dawn from Green Bay. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, good morning. My comment is I just don't see any reason for the Republicans to start working with this administration. I would think their prize is, you know, to take the Senate and the presidency in 2012, and it would just be better to continue to let the president, or try to make the president fail, is my opinion.
Well, what about all the people who are out of work? What about the economy that's suffering? Aren't we all in this together?
I do believe so. And after 18 months, we don't know yet exactly how how the economy is going to respond to what's going on. You know, it's growing just very slowly. And my opinion on the out of work, yes, it is, you know, the unemployment is at an unacceptable level, but we are told that it's jobs, jobs, jobs by the Republican Party every time they get on the news programs. And so, you know, you hear it enough, you believe it. But I think there's other issues out there, too.
What other issues concern you?
Definitely the health care.
Mm-hmm.
I really am disappointed that it would appear that very little was done to curb Wall Street excesses and the bank issues. You know, I would like to see that be a bigger issue.
All right, Dawn, thank you so much for your call.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's go to Joe from Franklin. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say to all the Democrats, that I'm one of them, this shall pass. I remember when Reagan took over, and we saw it in 92. The country flops back and forth between one party and the other. And I think you're going to continue to see that. I think in 2012, the Democrats will come back. You know, this just happens.
But this was large, so it was saying something.
I think that's just the economy. You know, they always say it's the economy, stupid. And it was the economy. And I really don't think... there was an article in today's paper that, you know, no matter what anybody does, the economy reacts on its own. We saw Clinton raise taxes in 92, I believe, 93, and the economy boomed. Democrat or Republicans cut taxes in 2001, 2003, and the economy boomed. And then it the economy tanks. I mean, it's just the economy... I don't think it has a lot to do with tax policy or any type of policy. The economy runs on its own.
What about the bailout? A lot of people were concerned, as you know, with the rise of the Tea Party in this country, that and many Republicans would agree with this, and some Democrats would agree with this, that the bailout of Wall Street was way too large. What we needed was help for working people.
Oh, I agree with that totally. I don't think they should have bailed out Wall Street at all. And that was under George Bush, although a lot of Democrats in the House and Senate supported it. But I think that's, you know, that's an indication of how both sides are beholden to the Wall Street people. That's where the money comes from for their campaigns.
So you're not overly concerned. Do you think it'll go back to Democratic control in a couple of years, or do you think this president's in trouble?
Oh, I don't think it's way too early to say for that. You know, whether he's in trouble or not, right now it looks like he is. But no, things will go back.
Okay.
I think there was someone on TV who said the last three presidents who lost both houses were Truman, Eisenhower, and Clinton, and all three won re-election.
Thanks, Joe, for your call.
All right. Thank you.
Sure. Bye-bye. Let's go next to Seth in Madison. Hi, Seth.
Oh, hi there.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure.
I just wanted to say my understanding, and I haven't heard this in a long time, is that the Great Depression was caused by just the divergence in wealth, and, you know, the average person didn't have enough money to eat and live and, you know, keep the economy going. And so I really don't see how justification can be made for, you know, tax cuts for the wealthy or a trickle-down theory or, you know, any of the policies that the Republicans have been pushing. So I don't know. I'd like to, I guess, hear what your next guest has to say about
that. We can't find our first guest. Do you think the president is in trouble? Do you think that, well, obviously something happened here that he didn't want to have happen. Why did it?
Right.
What do you think?
Right. Well, I think I agree with the last caller, everything he said. And, you know, I can't imagine him having done a better job. Honestly, I don't know what unemployment numbers or job growth or economic growth would have been good enough for the Republicans to say, wow, I guess boy, he really did do a good job, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I suppose he'll come out of this stronger. He seems to always do the right thing. And, you know, I trust the guy, and I'm optimistic things will get better. Things are certainly better now than they were in 1910 or 1810. And in the long run, I think things will work out.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for the call. Feel free to take on the question, too, that I know the House and Senate Republican and Democratic leadership and the president will be dealing with once he gets back from Asia. And that is, what are the ideas for growth? What are the Republican ideas? What are the Democratic ideas? What are your ideas for growth, for job growth in this country? Which I think loud and clear was the call from voters in this midterm election. We can't find Jonathan Alter, so we're just talking to you about this, but you're the important people here, right? You're the ones who are living in this economy, and you voted, so we're talking about that. David Winston will join us the second half hour. He's a fine Republican strategist. He was Director of Planning for Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich, and he is president of the Winston Group, so he will join us to give his analysis at 9:30 today. Bob from Marshfield, hi.
Morning. I wanted to make a point with regards to the candidates or those that the candidate elects, that for all the data and the information that they have in front of them through polls, whatever, telling them in the
Hello? Bob, you're going to have to call us back. The phone is just coming in and out. Glenn in Manitowoc. Hi.
Well, good morning. Thanks for having me
sure.
on. I sure do like Wisconsin Public Radio, the only voice of reason out there anymore. I'm rather disgruntled with the way the nation went and their short-sightedness. Obama has only had less than 2 years. And bottom line is they talk about jobs and they talk about the economy. And yet the people are so fearful of such a socialist president seem to be okay with buying products made in China, where most of our jobs went. That's a communist country, last time I checked. And they seem to be okay with borrowing huge sums of money from the People's Republic of China to pay for two wars rather than pay taxes and pay as you go. I keep hearing that from people of the opposite view, and yet when it comes time to pay taxes and pay the bills of society's decisions, they refuse to do so. Unless average citizens wake up and realize we have to be responsible for our own lives, and our kids and our grandkids are going to be in serious problems. We need jobs here, and not everybody can educate and get 4 or 6 years of college to survive. The vast majority of people don't have the means and previous education to do so, or they're at a level in life where it's not even an option. Stop buying Chinese-made products and stop okaying borrowing money from other countries rather than paying our own bills. It took 30 years to build this mess. 2 years isn't enough to unravel it.
How do you explain, Glenn, the huge Republican wave that took place? What do you think voters were saying?
Unfortunately, a lot of them are saying the right things, but they're not thinking it through. The last 30 years, again, has been reaction rather than action and total lack of patience. We've become a nation of instant gratification. You pick it up and it works, and if it doesn't, got to point your finger and wag your tongue at somebody else rather than take responsibility. I am one of them doggone liberals.
All right. Thank you, Glenn, for the call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. We've been trying to find Jonathan Alter, and I'm very sorry that he doesn't seem to be available by phone. He was to be our Democratic analyst the first half hour of the program today to look at the midterm results. And I think that he's incredibly insightful. Plus, he's written a very thorough book about the president 1 year after this was out a couple months ago, The Promise, the name of his book. Plus, his brother-in-law was Steve Kagan, who lost in the 8th Congressional District, and we were going to talk a bit about that. So maybe we can book him some other time. This we will be speaking with David Winston momentarily. He's president of the Winston Group. He's a fine Republican analyst, and he will talk about what happened on Tuesday as well. In the meantime, you're the people who voted, so we are talking to you. How does the president govern now? What would you like to see him do? Was this a message to him to work much, much harder to get jobs for people? And how does he go about doing this? What is the message that was sent to the Republicans who now have leadership in the House? Are we saying get together and do something? Or are we saying don't do anything so the president will not succeed in the next 2 years? Is he not going to succeed anyhow unless he does something dramatic? Are we going to see a do-nothing everything in government for the next couple of years? How do you explain what happened? We're taking your phone calls. 800-486-8655. Leave an email if you'd like to do that. That's talk@WPR.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to Jim in Marshall now. Hi, Jim.
Yes, the answers are very simple, but the American people are just too illiterate to catch it. We must face down capitalism. That is our number one problem. That is what is spawning every other problem we have out here.
Yeah, that's probably not going to happen, though, Jim. What do you think was the why did people vote the way they did on Tuesday?
They're full of anxiety. They're looking for somebody to blame. We're overpopulated. We're suffering from overconsumption, and we're short-circuiting from overload. We've got too many immigrants. Everything that's up should be down. Everything that's down should be up.
All right. Thank you, Jim, for your call. Rick from La Crosse. Hi.
Well, the problem is that the young people that buoyed Obama in 2008 didn't vote.
Yeah,
I know a lot of young people who simply did not vote on November 2nd, and I think that's the big problem, because the Tea Party people, the Republicans, they went out and voted in droves, but the young people, a significant factor in 2008, they didn't vote.
Well, isn't that the president's problem in some way? Why was he not able to inspire them to vote? Why didn't they vote?
Exactly, and that's another thing. The cognitive scientist George Lakoff put it well when he said it's a problem of framing. When they mischaracterized the Gunderson Lutheran Hospital program that they have, advising people on last decisions, you know, and doctors wanting to be reimbursed for that as death panels, you know, at that point, Obama could have gone and hired a film crew to take them to Louisville, Kentucky, and show them what a death panel really looks like, you know, the big insurance company Humana and how they deny claims and all that. But, you know, he didn't. There was no response. Similarly with other Republican, you know, attacks, you know, there was never any response. And then that was another problem with Obama. His team was very timid.
All right. Thank you, Rick, very much for your call. Rich in Rhinelander. Hi.
Hi. I don't know if this is going to be cheerier than Jim talking about capitalism being the root of the
problem.
Well,
Jim's on the same issue. You know, yeah. At least he's identified his issue.
I think our country is in trouble, and I disagree with the callers who say the economy will sort itself out eventually. I really don't care if the Republicans won or the Democrats win, although I'm probably more likely to vote Democratic than Republican. I just think people know that we've shipped a lot of jobs overseas. There are not good benefits on the jobs that are available here. Heck, when George W. Bush was president, and he probably wasn't my choice to be president, I said to family and friends, if he can bring peace to the Middle East, he's going to be my favorite president. I didn't think he could, and he didn't, but I think we've lost this sense of whoever is president is our president. And with the 15 million unemployed and so on and so forth right now in our country, I really don't think the Republicans are going to be in office very long at all if they can't deliver on jobs and benefits for the middle-class working people of this country. So,
well, it's kind of a weird situation, because you could also say that the president may not be in office for a second term if things don't get better.
Yes, I agree. But I'm generally not of the opinion we have to make things so bad that people actually come to their senses. But I'm wondering if we're not in a cycle like that right now, where currently voters are thinking either this party or that party has the correct answer, when really the truth is nobody on either side has the correct answer. We'll only find a correction out of this by working closely together.
Right, exactly. And it remains to be seen if that's going to happen, right, Rich?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay,
thanks.
Thank you, Rich. David Winston is joining us now. We gave up on Jonathan Alter. I don't know where he is. David Winston is president of the Winston Group. He is former director of planning for Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich, and that is his very short bio because he has a very lengthy bio. We'll be welcoming phone calls for him as well. All of you who are on hold, your calls will be good for David as well. Those of you who would like to join us, you'll have to wait. Our lines are filled. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Hello, David. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning, Kevin.
Nice to have you on the air. Well, you know, we're in this kind of weird situation, and you tell me how you think the president, what message he should have received from the midterms, and what message the Republicans should have received, and what you would like to see happen at the first meeting of the president and the leaders of the House and the Senate.
Well, that's a large series
all
of
all at once, sir. Yeah.
Well, let me start off in terms of what the president should have heard. I mean, one of the problems that he ran into initially that he could never sort of unravel was, and this was a question actually posed by the new speaker-elect, Boehner, which is, the American public wanted to know where are the jobs, and
right.
There was this sense that he did not address the economy and job situation the way he should. In fact, went off and did health care as opposed to sort of keeping that sort of command focus on jobs. So I think one of the messages that he got was a little more focus on what the American public wants, and that focus on jobs and the economy. The other element that he should have seen, and I will tell you that, and you're going to see a lot of analysis coming from a variety of different people, is that because of his particular policies, this country seems to have shifted to the right. In the last election, when you took a look at the exit polls, by a 10-point margin, moderates outnumbered conservatives. In this election, for the first time that I've seen in any exit polls, conservatives actually outnumbered moderates by a 2-point margin, 41-39. And so this president has created a context where the country actually moved to the right pretty significantly. And how does he manage that will obviously be a critical element.
Right.
On the Republican side, okay, the public has now given Republicans the chance to have this role in governing. And so this is now time to deliver. You know, just being able to make rhetorical points at this point in the game is not why Republicans were elected. It was to get something done. And so from a very pragmatic point of view, if you've been given a responsibility to govern, okay, now's the time to produce. That gets to your point in terms of the meeting that's going to occur here. And I think what you're going to sort of see is President Obama began to deal with moving away from the statement, I won the election from 2008, into how does he become a work with Republicans in a really meaningful way, and how do Republicans, who have sort of been just elected on clearly moving a specific direction, figure out how to manage that with the president. And I think it'll be a remarkably complicated meeting. I don't think there's any other way to look at it.
Well, you're so entirely reasonable. I think you better be in the meeting, David. Really? It makes a lot of sense to me.
I mean, again, having gone through this with Newt, I mean, Newt and President Clinton figured out a way to work together. And ultimately, at the end, it produced a balanced budget. It produced a growing economy and low unemployment. From our point of view, tax cuts and welfare reform. From President Clinton's point of view, again, getting the economy going and some things that he wanted to get. They managed to work through that. And we'll see if how President Obama is able to, can he do the same sort of things that President Clinton was able to do?
Well, let's focus on jobs for a moment, because I don't know what anybody's plan is at this point. The Democrats, the Republicans, I don't know anybody's plan to lower that very high unemployment rate. Everybody knows the election, you know, in some measure was about people are hurting. They need jobs. How do we lower that unemployment rate? Are we all on the same page as to what path we follow?
No, let me start off from the exit polls. 62%, I mean, this is just overwhelming, said the economy was the number one issue. I mean, the focus that the public has, basically any candidate who was not talking about jobs and the economy during this campaign was on the wrong topic. I mean, it was very clear from the exit polls. So the public has made their preference very clear. So getting to your point, no, I mean, I think what you're watching, and I think this is going to evolve, is two very different views of how to approach the economy and jobs, and that is you've got this sort of Keynesian approach, which is clearly where the president has been, and then you have the sort of more, for lack of a better phrase, supply-side approach. And I think what you're going to see in this initial meeting is how do the two parties sort of resolve that basic economic philosophical difference. And so one side is saying government spending. The other side is through tax cuts, you're going to generate the economic growth to create jobs. And that's going to be a fundamental difference that they're going to have to work through.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that, let's just talk about the president here for a moment. Do you think that he was green in the office? He didn't know exactly where he was going. He had too many advisors who were part of other administrations that he didn't, you know, even if he did something that you may have figured was too liberal, I wonder if he would have been more successful if he had skipped Wall Street and really done some kind of jobs program that would have lowered that unemployment rate, some kind of democratic populist kind of thing.
I think there mistakes are a little hard. I mean, and you and I have actually discussed this before. Every person who goes into that office eventually overreaches. And the reason is because they don't know where that boundary is. The question is, when they hit that moment, do they understand it and immediately pull back, or do they sort of ignore it? I would suggest that, unfortunately for this president, there was a sense of that they had some other things under control, so they kept pushing that envelope, and that was an error. And ultimately, he did take his eye off the ball in terms of the economy and jobs, and that was problematic. The other thing, too, that he clearly struggled with is he didn't understand how to bring in Republicans into the process so that he could make them a part of the whole sort of policy process. Ultimately, what they ended up becoming is these sort of high-profile conflict moments. Again, you remember the healthcare summit.
Oh, right? Yes.
I mean, that was a high-profile conflict moment, and that's not... I mean, again, going back to what Newt and Bill Clinton did, that was not the way they did it. And that, I thought that ended up being sort of an unfortunate moment for the president, because it just showed how much out of control the whole policy process was, at least in terms of trying to reach across the aisle. And I think one of the challenges for him is how does he learn how to do that? And he did not do that effectively. And that's where I don't think that Speaker Pelosi or Majority Leader Reid were particularly helpful in helping him manage that.
Mm-hmm. He did say at his press conference yesterday that when asked about health care and whether or not it was in danger at this point, he said he did not want to relitigate arguments over the last 2 years. Do the Republicans want to relitigate those arguments? Do the American people want them relitigated?
The American people are clearly not happy with this plan. I mean, and that came through pretty loud and clear also in terms of the election. So it's not a matter of relitigating. It's the fact that the public is not happy with where that health care plan came out. Now, he articulated a couple points of in terms of what people were for, which I would agree with. I mean, people do not want to get rid of pre-existing conditions. They like the donut hole being closed, having kids on till the 26 in terms of life not life insurance, but health insurance packages. Clearly, people like, but the overall package, there's a sense of it is not a good package, and it needs to be redone. So I have to say that's an example of maybe he wasn't listening particularly clearly. He's sort of cherry-picking what he thought were positive as opposed to understanding the broader problem of people are dissatisfied. And the reason for that, by the way, again, and survey research I've done, the people understood that if you bring 30 million people into a system and don't add a single doctor or nurse, the quality for people who already have health care, because they're going to be such a demand on their doctor's time and they're not going to be able to spend as much time with them as they would like, that's a problem that they have to sort of resolve. And I don't think the president necessarily clearly understood that given his answer yesterday.
Yeah. I, though, don't think that you know this. We did talk show day after day after day on this. This thing went on for a year, for more than a year. It's hard for me to believe that anybody has the stomach, considering what the current economic job situation is for people, that nobody wants to have another year of let's do health care again.
I couldn't agree. I mean, again, the big message from this public is focus on jobs.
Right.
Focus on the economy. Get that done. Yes, we're interested in these other issues. And the analogy I like to use is sort of a house on fire, right? The windows may be broken, and there may be electrical work, and the foundation may be cracked, but there's a fire on the roof. And until you put the fire out on the roof, which is jobs in the economy, the rest really doesn't sort of matter. And I think that's how people view jobs in the economy, is the fire on the roof. Get it put out.
Let's go to phone calls. Craig in Onalaska. Hi, Craig.
Good morning. I'm going to change my comments a little bit. I consider myself an independent voter. I did vote for both Democratic and Republican candidates in this last election. But I did, I more voted on the Democratic side than the Republican. But I'm going to hold the Republicans responsible. I'm not going to give them a whole lot of time in order to get things done before I start writing my congresspeople and senators and demanding that things get done, because they promised and have been promising that they'd get problems taken care of. So I really want to have action, and I want to have it quickly in all areas, health care, jobs, the economy. And I think that they are going to have to perform and come up with some very specific programs to get us out of the doldrums that we're in. I don't think that we can cut them a whole lot of slack, either perform or get out of the way.
David?
I couldn't agree more, actually. I think that he reflects the general mood of the electorate. It's like, focus on what we want focused on and get it done. And I think that's a reflective of a pretty common sense of most voters across this country, that that's what they want. So I'm in agreement.
Ray in Madison is next. Hi, Ray.
Yes, I know that politics are based on cliches, but I'm just still amazed at the disconnect. For example, politicians talking about creating jobs by firing public employees and balancing the budget without touching the military, which is like 59% of the budget. I think we have to all, I don't think this is just a passing ripple in our economy. I think it's a permanent change, and we all have to learn to live on less. We should be talking sustainable economics and not growth economics. This is a finite world, after all.
David.
Well, and again, I think that there's a philosophical difference here in the sense of when we've gotten out of situations like this, it's because we could figure out ways to grow the economy, whether it was Kennedy in the late 60s or Reagan in the mid-80s or Clinton and Gingrich in the late 90s. Ultimately, economic growth is what's going to pull us out of this. Having said that, the idea of creating jobs here, and I want to put a sort of a fine tune in terms of what the gentleman was just saying, it's not so much firing public employees, it's the sense of how do you create the right balance of public sector spending that doesn't take away too much from the private sector so the private sector can't grow. And I think that's the philosophical argument. The idea of just, you know, firing people willy-nilly, I mean, I agree with him in the sense of, no, we don't want to be doing that. But we do need to find that right balance between public sector spending and private sector growth.
Let's take on the whole very contentious issue with very different philosophies when we look at the Democrats and the Republicans, and that concerns spending and budgets and taxes. In order to get ourselves out of the mess in which we find ourselves, how do we deal with all those issues? How much attention do we pay to the deficit? How much attention do we pay to tax cuts? Do indeed they help stimulate the economy or not? There's a very clear philosophical difference here. And spending, too. Is there enough? Are there enough programs to cut significantly that are fairly meaningless to make a dent in that deficit?
Well, let's start with spending first. Clearly, there's a sense from the American public that we're spending too much. Now, having said that, when you get into the details, all of a sudden it gets a lot more complicated because, again, everybody's got their favorite item.
Sure.
And as a result of that, it tends to make that a very difficult process to go through. Having said that, restraining the growth in spending, there are a variety of different options that are available, but clearly nothing has been put on the table so that there's a public discourse yet. That's going to be a very important initial discussion. However, again, going back to the deficit that existed, at least in the 90s, what solved the deficit and eventually balanced the budget was restraining spending, so it wasn't like you were cutting specific areas, you were just restraining spending, but it was the economic growth, and so the income that came in just simply overwhelmed. And I was working for Newt at the time when he was speaker when that happened, and it was just the revenues just started pouring in, and as a result, we were able to balance the budget. This is where I'm going to show I'm a true conservative Republican here. I mean, my sense, and I believe in tax cuts in the sense of, by cutting taxes, you can grow the economy, which generates more revenues. And one of the interesting numbers, if you take a look at George Bush's era, in 2003 when he passed the tax cuts, looking at, in contrast to 2008 when he stepped down, as a result of those tax cuts, the actual revenue to the IRS increased by $800 billion. The problem was that Bush was spending it a lot faster than he was taking it in.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to... Hey, Ray, thanks very much for the call. Let's go next to Leslie from Preston, Minnesota. Hi, Leslie.
Hi. This is going to be kind of hard to lay out very concisely, but I have this sense that from the get-go, when Obama was first elected, there was like this big Karl Rove-type war against him to say no, not let him get anywhere. And then it built on this fear of my idea is that the country really wasn't ready for a black president. And after they woke up, after he was elected, it was like, oh my God, now immigration is going to go crazy. Welfare is going to go crazy. And instantly we got email after email of fear mongering of Obama, his wife, Pelosi. And I don't ever hear anybody talk about this, but just like this slow build and people out in everyday life, if I go out for supper or something, it's like people are talking about this fear that he's a Muslim and don't let him get anywhere because they wouldn't give him credit for any of the good things that he did. And it just seems like it was fear that caused this big election to go the way it went.
David.
I guess I have to. I kind of disagree with that pretty significantly. Again, this is a president who started off his term with a remarkably positive job approval, and still at this point, at a personal level, people still personally like this president. They've got a lot of difficulty with his policies. So, I mean, he started off in a remarkably strong position. In terms of people's wanting him to succeed. Again, there was a frustration with Bush at the end, and so the sense of the last thing the country wanted to do was be unhappy with the next president. So actually he came in with I think, a win behind him at two levels. One, obviously having won the election, but two, people wanted to like the next president, and he had a personality to fit that. And so I would say that has not been a dynamic. Have there been some isolated, you know, can you cherry-pick some situations to sort of go to that narrative, certainly, but I think overall that's where the country's been. In terms of the party, what happened initially, and this is going back to a previous question, the president sort of decided that he had won the election, and therefore this is the direction he wanted to go. And there was the infamous line that he gave John Boehner in one of the early meetings when Boehner was trying to lay out a specific policy that he would like to see adopted. And the president said to him, look, we won the election. And I think that set the tone, unfortunately, for the president. And it created a very conflictive situation between House and Senate Republicans in the White House. And that relationship ended up extending until we got to bizarre moments again, like the health care summit. I'd have to say that even when you take a look at the job approval as it exists today for President Obama, it's not as negative as many people think. I mean, you know, he's clearly below 50%, which means he doesn't have a majority coalition in place. But it's not like he's down in the 30s like George Bush was. But the problem that he's got is he took his eye off the ball at jobs and the economy, and he paid a serious price for it.
There were a lot of, there still are, a lot of progressive, if I can use that word, I don't know what to call people these days, Democrats who are highly critical and who remain highly critical of Obama to this day, that he yesterday was talking about the dire circumstances in which he found himself, that we were just about ready to go into a big depression, et cetera. There have been some Democrats who have said, you know, you didn't need to listen to the Republicans. You didn't need to listen to anybody. You needed to grab the whole government and just move it in a progressive direction. That's assuming that he was a progressive guy, and do kind of an FDR presidency here. You know, massive public works, get people back to work. Maybe even do, you know, universal health care. Just do it. What do you think of that?
Well, there's also the range of what could he get done. I mean, the health care packages he got through, I mean, he barely got through. So if you're looking for something that was even perhaps a little more aggressive in terms of moving toward the left, how would he get that through? And I think the same degree in terms of the stimulus package, if he had gone farther, then he would have gotten nothing through. And so to some degree, interesting arguments, but again, part of the problem, and again, you and I at a point in time have talked about this as well, one of the most difficult things to do is sustain a majority coalition. Ultimately, in this particular case, he moved too far to the left in terms of some of these policies, and he lost the middle. I mean, independents who broke by 18 points for Democratic candidates in 2006 broke by that same margin for Republicans in 2010. I mean, that's just a huge shift in terms of the political center. And so if the argument was to go farther in one direction, that would have just made that margin larger. I mean, it's very hard to sustain and govern a majority coalition, and the president has found out those difficulties.
Just to continue on this for a moment, though, if he had been able to accomplish really lowering that unemployment rate as a result of fairly big policies, he may not find himself in the situation that he's in.
Absolutely agreed. I mean, if the unemployment rate had been the 8% that he said that he was going to keep it under as a result of the stimulus, I think the election would have been significantly different. Mm-hmm. But the problem is it didn't, and he made some promises in terms of what the outcome would be, and ultimately that sustained high unemployment rate was a reflection that maybe what he was doing wasn't working.
Wasn't working. Yeah, exactly. David Winston is our guest. Thank you very much, Leslie, for your call, and we are welcoming your phone calls for him. He's president of the Winston Group, former director of planning for Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email, we'll go to an email in just a moment here, is talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to an email now, David. This is from Jerry Ann in South Milwaukee. The winners in yesterday's election need to lead by examples, but let's extend this to everybody. Republicans and Democrats, she suggests, need to roll back congressional salaries to the 1990 levels of $96,600 for representatives and $98,400 for senators, and end their automatic annual pay raises, cut their office staffing by 10%, cut their office budgets by 10%, over and above the staffing cuts, and cut their benefits to reflect cuts in benefits that have been what American workers have received in the private sector.
Well, Let me broaden that out, I think, to a broader item, and that is this whole concept of congressional reform. And I think one of the initial challenges, and one of the things I think you'll see begin addressed here right off the bat, will be what are the things that can be done to make what happens in the Congress a lot more transparent so the public can understand it. And I believe you'll see that happen. And I think that's important because I think what that's reflective of is this just dissatisfaction with the way Congress has performed. And, I mean, at this point, trying to roll back to those levels, if you asked anybody else who at this point to sort of try to live on a salary of what it looked like 20 years ago is not a fair reflection. Having said that, what members of Congress have to do is to make, show their worth. And I think what she's reflecting is that they haven't shown their worth.
Okay. Let's go next to, where are we? Ed in Brooklyn. Hi, Ed.
Hello?
Yeah. Hi, Ed. Go right ahead.
Oh, I just want to say I see a glimmer of hope with the last election. It, I think, got so many people mad that they passed such fake bills without even reading it and taking time. Like Pelosi, Speaker Pelosi made the comment, we'll find out what's in it after we pass it. And Representative Connor laughed. Of course I didn't read it. And people have common sense. They were just passing things. And that's about it.
Well, Ed, before you go, what bills were particularly troublesome, did you think?
What's that?
What bills were you upset about?
Well, the health care especially. And the last stimulus package, I wrote and called Senator Feingold and said, give it a couple of weeks, go through it, debate it more. There has to be more things. And they said they had to pass it. And then President Obama was on vacation, they passed it on Friday night, and he signed it on Wednesday. If it was that important, that it had to be passed,
Okay, David?
Now, and I think he points to, again, part of the process that I think was upsetting to people. I mean, forget the ideological in terms of your approach and attitude about the policy. It was this sense of, here's this huge bill, and you have 11 hours to read it. And I think everybody sort of saw that, or the perception was that, this is just being pushed through. And I have to say that, and going to Ed's point also, the fact that the president then waited a couple of days before signing it, everybody was, the reaction was, well, then why couldn't you have read it? So I just think that was just a tactical blunder on their part. But I think there was this sense of, if you're going to do change of this size, give people a chance to sort of understand it in a better way. And I think it was an error on the Democrats' part because it wasn't necessarily going to change things. They could have just allowed a better consumption. What it was seeming to imply was this: there are things in this bill we don't want people to know about. I'm not saying that this is correct. I'm just saying what it seemed to imply, that there are things in this bill that we don't want people to be aware about so we can get this thing voted through, and then we'll sort of work through the details of what happened. I'm not saying that that's what was in the bill, but I think that was what the impression that was left, unfortunately, for Democrats.
That's a huge bill, isn't it, David? How many pages is
it? It was like 1,900 pages.
Wow.
And there's no way, and you have 11 hours. And again, it's not like simple. It's because what's in there is referring other text in terms of other
right.
bills. It's sort of like, try to read 1,900 pages of Kant in 11 hours, right?
You'd be
out of your mind.
Thanks, Ed, for the call. Rick in Milwaukee. Hi.
Good morning.
Hi.
I am going to jump off of a previous caller, Leslie, and agree that I don't think that this was a vote so much to get Republicans in because they had a plan and they can do something better. And Wisconsin is a perfect example of that. To throw Russ Feingold out for a guy who kept saying, I'm not going to answer that question until after I'm elected. I'm not going to give you a plan for jobs until after I'm elected. So I really believe that this gets back to a race issue and that it was about getting people were asleep when Obama was elected. I worked for his campaign, so I'll admit that, and I was very happy about it. But I think then the country woke up, like Leslie said, and said, wait a minute, we got this black president. And they went out at the first chance they had this election and voted in Republicans just because, first of all, most of them were white, and second of all, because they were the opposite party. And they were not happy having a black president. And again, I'll give Ron Johnson as the example.
All right, but yeah, Rick, they still...
Nobody plans, and yet we voted him in. But I want to say one other thing. I keep hearing this, and I've heard it from other people this week on your show. Obama, with this attitude of we won, he said it twice, and both times in response to Republicans who were spouting talking points.
Yeah, well, you know, he did win, and he won in a big way. So, but this thing about race, it was a profound thing in this country that we did elect a black man. I'm not sure I agree with this, that we're saying that, oh, my gosh, we woke up and found out that we elected a black man. We did. We did it.
If I may, I'm going to go back to when Republicans lost in 2006. When Republicans lost in 2006, oh, it wasn't our policies, it was the scandal, or it was this, or it was that. No, Republicans got fired in 2006 because we did a bad job, right? And one of the toughest things for a party to admit is that they got fired. And I will tell you, when that was proposed in 2006 that actually we got fired, the reaction was very much sounding like what the gentleman just sounded like. I mean, that's a very tough thing to realize that the public has fundamentally said no to reject.
And it was a big loss. It was a big loss. David, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Good talking to you. Thanks,
David. David Winston, he is president of the Winston Group, and he is former director of planning for Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Chrissy Pease for producing this hour, and to Rhonda for on-air production.